It's 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, March 11th. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Thanks for tuning in. Currently 24 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. Heber City reporting 25 degrees. And on the phone with a look at the weather, we've got meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Wednesday. We're looking at plenty of sunshine, a couple of high clouds rolling through from time to time. Temperatures on the cooler side of things as we're looking at highs only in the mid-40s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 40s to near 50 in the Heber Valley. As we move throughout your Thursday, we'll start off with those temperatures into the upper 20s to low 30s across the Wasatch back. But we're going to start a warming trend that's going to move into the end of the week. Highs will be in the mid-50s for your Thursday afternoon in Park City. We're talking about high temperatures climbing into the low to mid-60s for us in the Heber Valley. But wait, it gets even warmer. Friday, lots of sunshine expected. Temperatures starting off at or above freezing even, and across most of the Wasatch back, we'll see those high temperatures climbing into the upper 50s for your Friday afternoon in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-60s for us in the Heber Valley. Your weekend forecast will feature a slight cool down as we'll have a weak front moving through, so we'll call it partly cloudy skies for your Saturday. Temperatures climb into the mid-50s on Saturday afternoon in Park City. Highs will be in the low 60s for us in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your Sunday, we'll be behind that weak front. It doesn't come through with a big chance of precipitation, just a very slight chance of a shower. Otherwise, we'll be looking at highs only in the upper 40s on your Sunday afternoon in Park City, with highs in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. Once we move into next week, we're going to be talking about a more significant warming trend as a big ridge of high pressure settles in across the western half of the country. This thing is going to have some staying power and will continue to strengthen throughout the morning. And so that means that we're going to be talking about the potential of seeing some all-time record temperatures moving in across the western half of the country. This is going to be a big story heading into next week. For us, what does that mean? Well, that means your forecast kicking off things in Park City on your Monday will feature a mixture of sun and clouds with highs nearing 60 degrees. Hey, that's nothing, though, because by the time we get towards your Tuesday, highs will be in the mid to upper 60s. The Heber Valley, mid-60s on your Monday, warm to the low 70s by your Tuesday. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. So temperatures dropped quite a bit, especially compared to the last few days. Most of the mountains saw a solid overnight freeze, up to 12 hours below 32 degrees, but winds picked up a ton. We saw gusts near 100 miles per hour off Hidden Peak, so above 11,000 feet. Otherwise, it was generally quiet in the backcountry. There was one report of a glide avalanche, so an avalanche where the entire snowpack releases, it slides on the ground. This primarily happens when the snowpack gets warm and in specific terrain features where the bed surfaces rock. So it's not super widespread and not necessarily a canary, but still something to be aware of. Today, our main issue is going to be that wind. So we've still got some soft snow available to transport. We've seen westerly winds up to almost 100 miles per hour now. So at all upper elevations, we're expecting to see both stubborn hard slabs and some sensitive shallower slabs up to 12 inches deep, and even at some mid-elevation ridge lines. Top of that, we're still talking about the persistent weak layer. It's very isolated and pretty unlikely, but repeater slopes, so slopes that have already avalanched, that are thin, rocky, steep, are suspect, or outlier zones that had a shallower snowpack throughout the entire year. And then as well, even though temps are cooler this morning, as the sun comes out, it's really strong in March, we could see some wet activity on all solar aspects and low elevation northerlies. So this morning, avalanche danger is moderate on all upper elevations and mid elevations facing west through east. And then it could rise to moderate by the afternoon for the lower elevations and wet snow.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much.
Yep.
Stay tuned. In just a minute, I'll be checking in with Park City Institute Executive Director Ember Conley. She'll have details on this week's weekend's fundraiser, as well as a look ahead at the rest of the main stage series. Summit County Housing Authority Director Madeline McDonough and County Transportation Director Carl Miller with details on the Housing and Transportation Community event happening tomorrow. And from the Heber Valley Chamber, Executive Director Dallin Kosher in with the latest. Well, the Sun Peak Homeowners Association has sent an 8-page letter to the Summit County Council asking members to pause its decision on proposed amendments to the development agreement for the Utah Olympic Park. KPCW's The group also wants to reopen that public hearing process. That March letter argues that the key information was omitted from the county staff report and public discussions. It says the proposal could significantly expand development beyond what was approved in 2013. Sun Peak Homeowner Association board member Meta Haley told KPCW she was speaking for herself and not on behalf of the board. She says the Utah Olympic Park is seeking a large expansion that would place a significant burden on the neighborhood.
They're asking for loopholes in their existing obligations around mitigation efforts for traffic, and they haven't provided any type of fiscal analysis that would give the public an understanding of what type of burden they're being asked to absorb. You compound that with the TIF, the tax incremental financing that they're asking for, and again, that transparency around what the fiscal impacts of this project look like feels really important for both our officials and the public to be able to make an informed decision.
Haley says the core issue is that some peak property owners bought homes believing they'd be living next to an Olympic Park. She says what is now being proposed represents a fundamental shift.
In 2013, they were entitled to 295,000 square feet of development with 10,000 square feet of commercial use. They're asking for almost 600,000 square feet today with about the equivalent 257,000, I believe, square feet of commercial space. So that's a very different park in terms of what it will look like in the future versus what it was portrayed throughout our neighborhood's history.
Colin Hilton, the CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, said he hadn't seen the letter in time to respond for this report. He noted that there have been 4 Planning Commission meetings, 2 public open houses, 2 direct meetings with the HOA board, and 1 county council meeting on the proposal so far. He sees the letter as another step summarizing their concerns and further delaying a vote. In the letter, the HOA outlined several concerns, including the use of the emergency access gate outside of emergencies, the removal of the phasing map that tied future development to improvements at State Route 224 and Kimball Junction, and the allowance of nightly rentals. However, Summit County Manager Shane Scott notes that the Summit County Attorney's Office has advised that some of those issues, including gate usage, the anticipated closure of the freestyle pool, and the financial implications for the park, fall outside the scope of the development agreement amendment and should not be considered.
I think a lot of the residents would disagree with that, but I think that's something that, if nothing else, I think we'd like to hear from the OP, how have those things been addressed? And if the answer is, we heard you and we're not going to do it differently, that's fine. Let's hear that answer. Or if it is like, well, we can do this differently, we can do that differently, I think that'll be helpful in making some progress here.
The Summit County Council has scheduled an hour-long discussion during work session today, starting at about 4 p.m. Scott says the item has already been delayed for a couple of weeks while officials were in Italy for the Olympics. A link to the agenda and instructions for joining the meeting online is kpcw.org. Well, the annual Saints and Sinners Masquerade Gala is set for this weekend, and in the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Performing Arts Foundation, Amber Conley. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this fundraiser is pretty much your signature fundraiser. Give us the details. Where, when, how much?
Yep, it's been our signature for about 13 years now. Big thank you to St. Regis Deer Valley and the Deer Crest Club for always hosting us. This is the fundraiser that we call it the adult prom. We dress up in our gowns and our tuxes and our suits, and we wear masks, and it's our masquerade gala. And while it is a load of fun, it really is to help raise funds for our community outreach programs. Specifically, we've had a 75% increase in the number of veterans that now come to our shows because we offer $5 tickets during the winter and $10 tickets for concerts on the slopes. So we're proud of that. And then we have our Young at Heart, our Creative Aging, where we offer senior discounts and then free tickets to the members of the Senior Center. Of course, our student outreach and our intern program. We were talking within ourselves just recently, and 12 of our tech staff, who of course graduates of Park City High, are former interns. And this has been a career path for them, and they actually are in the production industry. So that's something that we're very passionate about continuing. And then new this year, we are opening up more accessibility with our deaf community, and we offer an American Sign Language interpreter for our National Geographic Live programs.
Okay. So again, back to the details. It's the 14th, Saturday?
Saturday night, 6 p.m. starts. We have a reception. Then we have a nice plated dinner. We go into a program, and then we have dancing by the Fox Brothers Band, concluding at 11 p.m. So we'll be kicking everyone out at 11 p.m. We do have a few seats left. We typically sell out, and it's Park City style, as of course we wait till the last minute. but we do have a few seats left, so you can check us out at www.parkcitypa.org. So performing arts, PA.org.
Okay, and tickets are how much?
They're $300 a person, mm-hmm. and then $3,000 a table.
Okay. So is this the only fundraiser that you do?
No, actually, we've expanded, and we do a lot of different kinds of fundraisers. We do some wine classes with Fox School of Wine, and we host them at different donors' houses. And those have become wildly popular. They're limited to 30 people, and they always sell out. We have another one coming up in May. We haven't nailed down the exact date. We also do a Wild Wild West brunch at St. Regis now in November. It's usually the day after Halloween, and it's really fun. We have everyone dresses, of course, Western. We have some Western entertainment, and it's a brunch. Very different feel than, of course, our gala.
Yeah. Now, so the money raised, I mean, you mentioned all of the kind of different outreach programs that you do. Is it specific for just outreach, this money raised, or do you just put it into the general fund and use it where you need it?
That's a great question. Actually, this Saints and Sinners, this was going to be a little bit of a surprise, but here's the surprise. We are expanding at Concerts on the Slopes from 500 reserve seats to 1,000 seats, which needs... We need to purchase some little chairs. And while it might not be a passion project for many, it is a desperate need for us. And these chairs last for at least 10 to 12 years. The chairs we've had has been over 10 years. And it's a great way if a business wants to market, we can have their logo on the back. But this is something we're going to be raising funds for. And again, while it's not super exciting, because the chairs require a trailer, we also will be raising funds for the trailer to haul the chairs back and forth from the concerts.
Okay. Do they get to stay there all summer?
Well, the chairs live in the trailers during the summer, and then they live in a storage thanks to Park City Storage during the winter.
Okay, so you mentioned that's incredible, the increase in the number of veteran tickets, just because you're getting the word out. And
it is, and you know, we started this about 3 years ago. Personal story: my dad was a Korean War veteran, and definitely pulled on my heartstrings for many years, and just feel that we need to continue to honor our veterans and our active military, and this is just an easy way to welcome them.
Yeah, and you still offer the $5 student tickets as well.
We do. We offer $5 student tickets. We offer our 2-for-1 educator tickets, and this isn't limited just to Park City teachers. This is limited to any educator, really throughout. You know, if we have a visitor coming in that is, you know, skiing or hiking, and they're a teacher, the 2-for-1 tickets. And we also offer, our Rotary clubs get a 50% off ticket as well. So if you're a member of our local Rotaries, all three of them, we offer Rotary discounts.
All right. There's also, I think, a silent auction happening Saturday.
We do, and we have amazing. I'm really excited about the silent auction. We have some great opportunities there. We have about 60 items ranging anywhere from golf to, a Las Vegas lake house. So there's lots of opportunities. It starts the night of the gala, so 6 p.m. It's going to start on March 14th, and then we run it until after the gala. We run it until March 18th, and it ends at 5 o'clock. We have some guitars that have been signed by our artists from this past summer, so those are fun, too.
Okay. Again, the website is just Park City.
parkcitypa.org.
All right. And let's see, the main stage series is wrapping up. Tell us about some of the final shows you've got coming up.
Well, this weekend, we call it either great planning or bad planning. I'm not sure. But we have Colby Calais that will sell out. We're already at 1,080 tickets sold. 7 o'clock, main stage, Eccles Center, Colby Calais. And then in the lecture hall, we've teamed up with the Intermountain Health Hospital, And we're bringing in Dr. Jag Singh. He is a heart cardiologist out of Harvard, and he's going to talk about preventative medicine and how he uses AI specifically in the world of medicine. That is sold out. So that we're excited about those two. March 18th, free concert. The Army Jazz Band is coming in, and they're also doing a student outreach the next day. But a kind of a fun fact, one of our volunteers' mother, who is 104, is a World War II veteran, and she is coming to that concert, so we'll be doing a shout-out for her, so we're excited about that. March 21st, The Magic of Michael Grandinetti. The magic shows are wildly popular, especially, you would think that it would be the kids, but it's the adults. We love that. March 26th, we're set out with Christopher Cross. If you're interested in watching, or excuse me, hearing Christopher Cross, I would not wait to buy your tickets. We're already at about 1,000 tickets there. March 27th, we have the Mariachi and the Mexican Asocio de Mexico dancers. It's going to be beautiful. April 3rd, Sesame Street Live. This is going to be a great show. So Big Bird, Elmo is going to be on the stage. And ending the series, National Geographic Live, Penguins of Antarctica. Big thank you to the Eccles Family Foundation as well. They have helped fund our National Geographic Live programs.
Okay, so the final date is what?
April 24th.
24th, okay. So any standout moments or performances for you this season? I mean, it sounds like you got a couple blockbusters happening. But
we have some blockbusters. One of the surprises has been our Colin Cloud, Master Illusionist, that was back in February. I've had people still reach out to me and express how wonderful he was. And kind of fun fact, my husband attended and I was unable to attend. He was trying to Google of how these things were done. That was definitely a standout. I'm really excited about Christopher Cross.
Okay.
it shows my age.
Yeah. So you found out that magicians seem to resonate with local audiences. What are some of the others that, that it's like, man, we're going to make sure that we get these back on
schedule?
We will.
We'll continue our National Geographic Live series. They provide student outreach. Our students always love those, as does a lot of our Park City residents and surrounding communities.
Hmm. Yeah, so how do you decide what artists and performances make it onto the main stage series?
So we work with agents specifically for our musicians, right? Our Colby Calais, our Christopher Cross. And oftentimes we send out a notice of, hey, we're programming, which we've done, right? We're programming for this next year. And then a lot of it too is being able to see who's routed through, meaning who's in Idaho, who is in Nevada, who's in Denver, and they always like to do a stopover in Park City. I mean, who doesn't like to be in Park City? And so those are some things. We also are really focused on our family-friendly programs, so we're going to continue programs like our Sesame Street Live.
Okay. Have you already started planning for next year's main stage series?
We have. Hmm. We have a dance company that hopefully we'll be able to sign a contract with over January. And this is something I think is important that our listeners know. With the exit of Sundance, we were the main venue. And with that, we received funds and a sponsorship through Sundance Institute, along with sponsors. It is going to be about a $220,000 decrease in our budget. And for a nonprofit, that's really significant. And so looking at our program during the winter, we're trying to bring in bigger names, people know them, really focusing on what we know will sell. And so that's something we're dedicated to. And then I've already shared that Concerts on the Slopes, we're expanding our reserve section, but we're also expanding. A big thank you to Park City Mountain Resort and to CVMA. We're moving from 3,500 capacity to 5,000. So continuing to lower the grade on the mountain and expand the entire area between the gondola and the orange bubble to where we have a flatter surface, so we're no more tuck and roll running down the hill. And that concert series is just exploding.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned the dance company. I love the dance companies, but I'm always disappointed that there's not more people there. I mean, I know that we've had, Alvin Ailey and things like that that do a little bit better, but...
It is disappointing, and I think we're running into what a lot of nonprofits are seeing. There is so much to do in Park City that oftentimes we're overlooked for the world-class performers that we bring in, which is why we depend so much, of course, on our grants, but on our individual donors and businesses.
Okay. And is Concert on the Slopes fully booked at this point?
We are waiting on 2 confirmations, but right now we're sitting at 13 concerts, which is 1 more already than what we had last year. And if you remember back in 2023, we only had 6. So this is the concert season that explodes. I have to tell you, I'm really excited. We're doing an 80s weekend over Pioneer weekend. So 24, 25, 26 of July. We have 38 special. I will give you a teaser. It's not been officially announced, but we have Taylor Dane and Exposé coming in for the Women Pop 80s on the 25th. And on 26th, we have some 80s country with Sawyer Brown. Both of all of them that are on sale right now, if you're waiting to get your 38 special tickets, I probably wouldn't. We're already sitting at 1,000 tickets sold.
Okay. All right, Amber, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just appreciative of all of our support that we continue to receive and looking forward to the fun that we provide here in Park City.
Okay. Amber Conley, Executive Director of the Park City Performing Arts Foundation. Thanks and good luck with the fundraiser.
Thank you.
The Summit County Housing Authority is hosting a housing and transportation community event tomorrow. On the phone with details, I have the Director of Summit County Housing Authority, Madeline McDonough, along with County Transportation Director, Carl Miller. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Hey, Madeline, start by giving us the details for tomorrow's event, when and where.
Yep, tomorrow's event will take place from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mountain Regional Water Building. That's 5739 Paintbrush Road in Park City. The first half hour or so will include tabling from some of our partners. Then we'll move into a panel presentation that Carl is a part of. And then we'll transition to questions from the audience that you can submit early by the RSVP link, or you can do at the event using a QR code or some slips of paper that we'll have available for you.
Okay, so this is the Mountain Regional's new facility?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Great. Okay, so what's the goal of the housing and transportation event?
This is a part of a 4-part series. We're going to be talking about some of the topics in which housing intersects most commonly. So this first one is really addressing some myths, what we've heard around housing and transportation, and hoping to provide some community education to help dispel some of those myths. Our hope is to be able to build up some advocacy for affordable housing in Summit County based on having, more knowledge of what is actually happening in our community.
So what are some of those most common myths about affordable housing that you hope to address?
We're going to be talking about the relationship between affordable housing and traffic congestion and how there's a myth in believing that affordable housing causes traffic. We're going to be talking about how parking requirements can actually make affordable housing more expensive. We're also going to be addressing the relationship between regional planning and transportation and housing. We've already had some questions submitted from the community about wanting to understand how to best plan for seniors in affordable housing. So I imagine we'll be addressing that question as well.
Well, Summit County continues to struggle with workforce housing shortages. I mean, what local programs or policies do you think are currently making the biggest difference?
Our deed restriction program is currently making the biggest difference. We have about 16% of our housing stock is deed restricted. This is the program that allows us to keep housing affordable long-term, and we're continuing to build up that stock, both in new development and by purchasing existing units and deed restricting them. The Housing Authority is also working on a pilot program to incentivize deed-restricted accessory dwelling units to promote housing in a, you know, more compact way. So it's smaller projects, sort of one-off in people's backyards to try and help build up our housing stock. And we're hoping that that will be quite effective as well.
Yeah, and how does the lack of affordable housing affect the local workforce and the broader community?
Yeah, if we're looking at statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau, in 2002, we imported about 56% of our labor, and in 2026, we're importing about 65% of our labor. So there is a big impact on traffic, like we'll be talking about tomorrow, our community, and it makes it difficult for our businesses to find employees who are willing and able to make the commute up if they don't live in the community.
Okay. Some residents, of course, worry that affordable housing will change the character of their neighborhoods. I mean, how do you address those concerns?
I think what we've seen from research is that affordable housing really adds to the character when it's done well. It adds to property values. Again, when done well, there hasn't been any link between affordable housing and increased crime rates or anything like that, which is some of the myths that we hear. Our hope is to utilize affordable housing to strengthen our community by allowing our workers, to be a part of Summit County full-time and not just commuting in and out.
So Carl, from a transportation perspective, how does a lack of affordable housing affect the commuting patterns here in the county?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of times we think, well, maybe we can just, separate housing and jobs, and we'll just add more road miles, more lanes, and that'll solve the problem. But it really doesn't. I keep a quote on my desk from Lewis Mumford that says, adding highway lanes to deal with traffic congestion is like loosening your belt to cure obesity. You know, it kind of gets at the symptom, but not really the cause, which is people are too far away from their jobs, too far away from their services. And so you'll get situations where communities think, well, we'll just add one more lane. We'll just add one more lane. I used to live in Houston, and just west of that in a city called Katy, where they're now up to 26 lanes on their freeway on the energy corridor because they thought just one more lane. And you know what? It's still the highway there is still terrible. There's still traffic. And that means unsafe roads, a lot of congestion, a lot of air pollution, and just not a community that people would want to live in. And it really decreases the overall quality of life for everybody.
So why is it important to talk about housing and transportation together rather than treating them as separate issues?
Well, they really are the same issue. As far as people's affordability, we've looked at national studies that show that people will basically spend the same amount from their take-home checks, whether that's more towards housing or more towards transportation. But overall, your housing plus transportation costs are usually about the same, and they're pretty static, unless a community is really willing to invest and good land use planning that brings housing close to services and infrastructure necessary stores like grocery stores. Otherwise, it just really makes unable for people to live in the places that they want to. And really, it costs a lot of money for everybody, especially for the community that has to build these roads, which are very expensive.
Yeah. So how does transportation planning then factor into decisions about where new housing should be built?
Great question. I think that when we plan holistically and we plan both with housing, land uses, and transportation in mind, we can really find those synergies to make sure that we're really developing in ways that we're putting housing where roads already are, where transit stops already are. So we were giving people more choices and more ability to get around the community and not necessarily forcing people into vehicles. You know, some people either can't drive or don't want to drive, or Maddie talked about with the senior housing, maybe are not as comfortable driving anymore. And we want to make sure that have people still have that freedom even as they age and as they live in their communities.
Yeah, so what transportation solutions are out there? I mean, of course, transit improvements, regional partnerships, as Maddie mentioned. I mean, how can those help ease pressure?
Yeah, I think taking a really wide range and a wide perspective, whether that's, of course, roads will always have a role in solving transportation solutions, but also other options, active transportation, and trails, sidewalks, transit. I know that High Valley Transit does a tremendous job with providing a variety of services, whether that's micromobility or fixed route or the upcoming bus rapid transit. All of these are geared towards making people have choices and being able to get around their community in the ways that they want to. So we have a tremendous transit system here. We also have great trails and active infrastructure. So we really have an ability to get people where they want to go in the way that they want to get there.
Yeah, so kind of looking out into the future, I mean, if we got this housing and transportation planning right, I mean, what would the community look like, say, in 20 years?
Yeah, it would look like people just spend less time in traffic, less time in doing the things that they don't want to do, and more time out in nature with their families, enjoying their lives, and not having to spend these very long commutes either from other communities or even within the community. Nobody gets up in the morning and says, I want to spend a lot of time, in my car on the road. They want to be doing the things that they want to do. And so moving housing and jobs and services closer together and providing better connections really improves the quality of life for everybody.
Yeah, and Maddie, as a planner, I mean, what are the biggest policy decisions coming up maybe that residents might want to be paying attention to?
I think there'll be some really interesting conversations this year around our development codes and how they can be modified to be the best tools that they can be to create the community that we want. It's really important that community members are active in those conversations because we don't always necessarily tie a development code to, this means a change in housing or this means a change in transportation. So being cognizant of that, I think, is really important. The other part of the conversation that's going to be really great for community members to be involved in is the planning department will be updating our general plans, and that involves a comprehensive look at our future land use maps. And the future land use maps in the general plan really are what dictate where that zoning can go in the community. So it's that long-term view of planning holistically, like Carl was mentioning, how should transit be related to housing, be related to jobs, be related to infrastructure. So those are going to be some big opportunities for community members to really shape the future of Summit County.
Okay. And as you mentioned, this is the first in a quarterly series. What other topics will future events explore?
Yeah, our next speaker series is tentatively slated for June, and that's going to look at housing and open space. Other topics that we are considering are housing and local government, and then also exploring how folks can get involved in advocacy or surrounding affordable housing.
Okay. All right. So again, if people are interested, it's happening tomorrow, Thursday, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mountain Regional Water District offices there at 5739 Paintbrush Road. Anything else either of you would like to add?
I think that's it. Thank you so much.
Okay. That's Madeline McDonough and Carl Miller with Summit County. In the studio now with an update from the Heber Valley Chamber, I have Executive Director Dallin Kosher. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with some lodging tally. What kind of winter has it been for the Heber Valley in terms of winter visitors?
You know, The end of 2025 was pretty soft, but we're having a good start to 2026. And so, for example, we track daily room demand. So how many room nights we saw in over the course of a month. So, for example, we are seeing some good things from comparative of previous years, but overall the low is kind of a soft year, soft winter, as to be expected. But in 2025, we saw room nights demand for about 22,000. And that was up from 2024 of 18,000. So growth there, but overall the year was pretty quiet. But in 2026, we're seeing in January, just this last month, or a couple months ago, we have data just through January right now, that we saw room nights go from 22,000 in 2025 to 26,000 in 2026. So we're seeing a great some increase there, and that is we have about 1,500 rooms in Heber Valley or Wasatch County, and that we're seeing growth demand at the Deer Valley East Village and Grand Hyatt. So that's exciting to see that growth. So our occupancy rate is hovering around that 50%, like normal, but we're also seeing demand go up. So we also have more rooms, but also more demand. So
sure. And as we know, this hasn't been a great year, and I'm guessing especially disappointing for the opening of that new terrain at East Village that just didn't happen due to a lack of snow. So we really didn't get to see what it will be like in a decent snow year. I mean, with 4-5 hotels being planned, I mean, is there any concern that
I'm optimistic. As I was listening to the weather reports for the last little while about this kind of snow year, the things I read were saying like we've about 100 years ago we had a similar winter, right? And so I guess I'm hoping that's it's just a blip in the climate, right? Or in the pattern that every once in a while you have 100-year storms for floods, you have 100-year storms of no water in the Wasatch County or in Utah for snow. So I'm optimistic that this is a one-time event, or at least a rare event, not a continued future.
Yeah. So 1,500 rooms in Wasatch County now, I mean, with the proposed development, I mean,
we'll be well over 2,000 by the time those are all done. And, you know, you got the Four Seasons and the Waldorf Astoria. Mm-hmm. And we have the Sky Ridge hotels that are Blue Sky on the other side of Deer Valley or of the East Village. So a lot of things are happening there, so we'll be well over 2,000 by the time this is all said and done, which is a lot. But I think our team's up to the task of helping bring visitors to the community. And one of the things that's kind of nice about the Jordanelle East Village area is that we hope to have people come down to our community through some sort of transit opportunity. So I'm optimistic that we can look at for some ways to get people to use a convenient transit system so it doesn't bring more vehicles into the valley, and also to help with our tourism within the valley, trying to figure out some sort of circular, kind of like what we have here in Park City. I think that would be fantastic in Heber Valley.
Yeah, and looking ahead to the summer, I mean, I was out at the Jordanelle this past weekend, and it was devastating how little water is there. I mean, we don't even have, like, boat ramps.
So it's kind of typical where you'll see Deer Creek filling up right now, which it is. And then from what I understand with the state parks, that Deer Creek will fill first, and then the spring runoff will be caught in Jordanelle. And then you'll start seeing Deer Creek lower in the coming into the summer, and then Jordanelle will take its turn. So I that's kind of the traditional path, but yeah, you're right, it's still pretty low.
Yeah, well, and there's not much runoff.
where is this runoff going to come from, right?
Yeah.
And so hopefully we get a good, at least some wet days in the spring here in the next little while. That would be fantastic.
Okay. Let's see, you recently returned from Italy you were part of that observer program for the IOC. The only Wasatch County representative. I was surprised by that.
I was surprised too, but I'm grateful that I was able to make it happen. this is something, you know, it's one thing to know about the Olympics on paper or through the reading and the stories and stuff, but it's another thing to experience it. I was 17 years old in 2002, so I didn't really participate much in it, but to be there in a behind the scenes capacity to see how, what the planning it takes, what the strategy it takes, the number of people, the volunteers, all that stuff, it is really exciting and neat for me to think about what we can do here in Utah. And personally, I think Utah is poised to smash records again and to, you know, blow the Olympics out of the water again, because Italy is beautiful, stunningly beautiful and fantastic. But, you know, all of our venues are within an hour of Salt Lake City Airport. And so that's going to make the ancillary tourism and visitation opportunities much greater. You know, I was in Cortina, and I just stayed there in that area and up to the cross-country venue. And that, you know, we spent between 4 and 5 hours a day on buses and driving. So that kind of limited our ability to be tourists in the town, be visitors. And so I think Utah has a way to, we're going to be much better at capitalizing on the visitors who want to say, I'm going to go up to Ogden and see the great ski competitions, but I want to go see Park City and Hebrew Valley too, because I can, because it's easy and convenient to do all that. So I anticipate a lot of inter-venue play for our visitors and guests coming to Hebrew Valley and to Utah in general.
Yeah. And anything else you kind of took away from what works and what maybe doesn't?
So one of the things I think from our communities that we need to do in Hebrew Valley, I talked about a little bit about transportation and like how do we get people to move around in the valley. And also in 2002, what I've heard is that the community just kind of let the Olympics come and go, right? And they just said they came into Soldier Hall, they were bussed up and they were bussed out and left. Where this time around, our leaders are like, we can't let that happen again. Let's show the world how great our valley is and what the great things we can do. So capitalizing on the Olympic spirit is going to be something huge that we can do, not just from an economic standpoint, but also from a cultural exchange standpoint. And that's something I really learned there, that in addition to the infrastructure projects that we're going to need to involve and put into place, I know it's going to be tempting for people to want to leave the valley to sell their, you know, put their house on the market for 2 weeks and make a quick buck. And that's fine, but I would suggest people stay and participate and enjoy. This is a once in a lifetime, or maybe twice in your lifetime, opportunity to host this kind of venue and event. And it's just a different vibe when the world comes together and has a great experience.
Yeah, and you know, in 2002, I remember it pretty well, was that, you know, Heber Valley really wasn't a big player in
quiet.
It. I mean, right? I mean, we had certainly all of the Nordic events out at Soldier Hollow, and I think I remember maybe a couple powwows or something, yeah. You know. But other than that, nothing downtown. And of course, you'll have the Heber City Park. I mean,
right.
Certainly an opportunity maybe to do more.
Yeah, for context, for historical context, Soldier Hollow Golf Course was not built. Zermatt was not built in 2002. So you think, oh, these have been around forever. Well, no, they haven't. And those are some staples in our community. So it's like, it's a much different place now that after when the Olympics come back. So I think we're poised to do it better this time around and to help our community. It was very shocking and exciting to see the how intense Nordic events are. As far as from a spectator standpoint, I compare it to our college football here in the United States, where we just go crazy over college football. They go crazy over Nordic events. There was 19,000 people at the Nordic event when we were there. And, you know, Soldier Hall's capacity is around 15,000, which will be great. And it was just a cool vibe. It was a party atmosphere. And so I look forward to maybe recreating that in some sort of form or fashion here in Heber Valley. And I think we can do a great job of that as well. But just eye-opening, like, this is coming to our community.
Okay, let's see. The Wasatch Back Economic Summit date has been set. When and where is this going to be?
It'll be May 11th at the Grand Hyatt at Deer Valley East Village. Mm-hmm. We hope to have that continue to be our permanent home, nice way between both our communities. We have some great topics that we're working through. basically, the theme of our event is building resilience with building business resilience. And we have some different topics from the tourism space to workforce development. So we would love to have everybody come out. Tickets will go on sale within the next 7 to 10 days. So check out Google Wasatch Back Business, Wasatch Back Economic Summit. And it'll take you either to Park City or our website, and you can get the information there. Registration is at the Park City Chamber website. So, anyways, we have links to that on both sites. But like I said, in the next 7 to 10 days, those should start opening up. And we have about 400 seat capacity. So it usually does sell out or comes close to selling out each year. So don't wait.
Yeah. And have you got the lineup fixed or finalized at this point? Or
Close. We have some good things coming out. We are... like, we have our topics, but we are still working on all the individual speakers to get there. And we're looking forward to some really interesting topics that range from, like I said, workforce development to how to evolve to adapt to an evolving community and environment. And even like this discussion about regional collaboration and collaboration with through planning efforts and what that look like. So it's a lot of fun topics to explore.
Okay, and of course we just finished up with the legislative session. Anything
yes.
there that concerns you?
So one of the things that our industry, the tourism industry, was concerned about was the HB 231, was this idea to change or repeal restaurant tax. And listening to the debate on that, it was very interesting to hear. You know, like, who really pays restaurant tax? Is it visitors? Is it locals? And by way of some data for us, I looked at our four popular restaurants, and all of them, about a third of their visitation was, or from their of their business was from locals. So two thirds was from out of town folks, and so we really felt like this was an important thing to oppose, because it pays for things like our Wasatch County event complex. It pays for a bond on that. And to me, I like that it keeps a focus on visitation and recreation. So if we went to a straight sales tax, it could just get disappeared into the ether. So without a specific focus, you know, we probably wouldn't have those opportunities into the future. So it didn't pass, and we worked with our local House representative to just make sure we know our thoughts and feelings were felt and shared it with him. So we're grateful that funding remains.
Well, I think this is voter approved too, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, if communities didn't want it, if the majority of communities are eating out
yes,
our locals,
right.
then they wouldn't have to adopt it, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know all those finer legal points as about how, like, you know, some of that history, but, you know, it's something that when you are out and about, you kind of even don't think about it. You just go and enjoy. And I think the putting into a sales tax would have probably had an adverse effect on more locals, and, you know, as people who are struggling too as well. So it worked out in the tourism industry favor, and so we look forward to continue working with those funds.
Okay. Anything else, Dylan, you wanted to mention?
The only thing I would say is that we have our Ask Heber Valley Expo on April 11th. There are still booths available to come present your business. It's a great way to get in front of our local community. This year we're going to do free hot dogs and drinks for attendees. So we're getting, hopefully have 1,000 folks out there. We're gonna have 1,000 hot dogs and drinks. So come out and enjoy the evening, the afternoon. It's from 10 to 3 on April 11th, and we'll be at the Wasatch County Rec Center.
Okay, Dallin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Dallin Kosher is the executive director of the Heber Valley Chamber.